Aletha Meyer Pinnow, 31, of Duluth, died from depression and suicide on February 20th, 2016. That was the first line of Aletha's obituary as it was printed in the paper. Aletha's older sister, Eleni Pinnow, joins us this morning to talk about her death and the family's decision to talk honestly about her suicide and depression that got the entire country talking. Our series, Don't Believe Everything You Think, talking about suicide, continues this morning right here on Northland Morning. Dr. Eleni Pinnow, our guest in the studios. Hey, good morning. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
The family wrote in the obituary, in addition to that first sentence, if the family were to have a big pie-in-the-sky dream, we would ask for a community-wide discussion about mental health and to pull the suffocating demon of depression and suicide into the bright light of day. Please help us break the destructive silence and stigma surrounding mental illness and suicide. You and I talked on the phone. We've talked on the phone a couple of times before as we're getting this interview scheduled. And I said, I can understand extra sympathy, perhaps, for a family, mm-hmm. for any family that loses a young person too young. But I truly maybe am too young, which is surprising that I'm too young for anything, to understand why there would be any kind of judgment or stigma attached to a suicide. Have you gotten any insight, hard one as it would be, into why that might be?
I think a decent part of it is just the manner of, this is someone that essentially chose to leave you. And I think that it's difficult to think about that. And I think if someone has never experienced depression or never had a family member with depression, it can be difficult to understand how that could occur. And I also think there's a lot of fear there. So if somebody like my sister, who was kind and funny and helpful and was adored by her family, by her coworkers, by her friends, if she could fall prey to something like suicide and depression, what's to stop somebody, in your own family from feeling that way? And so I think if you demonize or, think that there's something different about people that commit suicide or families that have had suicide in them, then I think it makes you feel safe that this is never something that's going to touch you. Whereas, that's just not true. Suicide, I think, is something, and depression too, is something that can touch just about anybody, and I'm learning has touched just about everybody. So I think it's kind of a defense mechanism to say, this can't happen to me. They're obviously different in all these ways.
Right. As a professor of psychology and as a person who is learning all of these things, again, in the worst possible way, you do understand, don't you, that her thinking was probably not, I'm leaving you love me and I'm leaving you. Her thinking was, I am a burden, I am a problem, everyone would be better off.
Yeah, and I understand that at an intellectual level. So I'm a cognitive psychologist, so I study memory and spoken word recognition. So this is far from my professional thing, but I teach about suicide and depression in my classes. And as an academic subject, I absolutely get that. And in her letters, she said, don't feel sad, I'm not worth it. So she clearly thought that this was not something, that her death would be something that to us would be so trivial, like, oh, she told me not to be sad, I guess I won't. And so I think there's a disconnect there because emotionally, it's really difficult. It is a real struggle for me to wake up every day and not have my sister. And so while I cognitively and intellectually understand this was a symptom of her depression, I say I lost my sister and then she died from suicide because depression took my sister before she died. And I think cognitively I understand that, but it is so painful that emotionally I'm maybe not quite there yet, and maybe I'll never be there.
You may not be.
Yeah.
and that would certainly be understandable. Talk just a little bit about your sister. Aletha was, she had companion animals, she had a huge loving family, she was a special education teacher who was adored by her students. She sounds like the kind of person who would have noticed instantly if anything was different or wrong or struck her wrong about any of her students, if any of the animals had started acting oddly, if there was anything going on with members of the family, she would have been right there to say, "What's up?" How did depression take away her ability to do that for herself? Because I think people don't understand that depression, I liked what was written here about the suffocating demon of depression. Mm-hmm. Depression changes your thinking. You struggle to think rationally about things, but it's usually not so far off that you can even notice it. You think, I'm not thinking irrationally. I'm thinking rationally. I've got a clear grip on the mm-hmm. fact that I'm useless. How did depression change her thinking so she couldn't see what was going on with herself?
Well, I think part of the issue with that for us and for my family, part of that problem is she spends all of her energy trying to look fine to us. So it was really difficult for us to kind of see those changes. And I knew that she was depressed and I knew that she was slipping away and I knew that she was struggling. But I think ultimately what happened is if you ever asked my sister, you know, what do you do? She would say, I'm a special education teacher and I'm awesome at it. And she was awesome at it. And I think her thinking was just so distorted. And I think it's sort of like that old saying, a lie told often enough becomes the truth. And I think it's sort of just like, you know, we all have this inner monologue as we're going through our day. And I think my sister's inner monologue was just really toxic to her. Like, oh, they're only doing this because they feel bad for you. Or, oh, look at you, you're screwing up again. Or all this terrible stuff is happening. It's because you deserve it, blah, blah, blah. And so I think, you know, if you have this inner narrator that's kind of narrating your life in a really harmful, negative way, that sort of becomes your reality. You know, it's not something that's separate from you. So I think that essentially this voice that was telling her she was worthless, she was no good, you know, the world would be better off without her, essentially became kind of her truth. And so she just started living in according to that and trying to act fine so that we wouldn't know how much she was struggling. And that's really painful to know that, you know, she was in such pain that she thought she was a burden to us because she was such a joy.
And that inner voice never offers any helpful suggestions.
No, never.
I found there's never any, you're so worthless, but if you did this, you could improve. Mm-hmm. It just stops. It just dead ends in despair.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing is, you know, rationally thinking about it, which I can do right now. The solution that her depression offered her of suicide was a crap solution. Like, I was just a terrible solution. But I think when you get to that place and that voice has been talking to you and telling you you're worthless for so long, it sort of becomes support for this narrative of, well, I have to do this. I have to kill myself because there's no hope for me. And so I think it just is like digging deeper and deeper into a hole. And eventually she just couldn't see that what was happening for her own narrative was the flawed one.
I've been asked before by helpers, do you want to die or do you want the pain to stop?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is almost always, I want the pain to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was really true for my sister. And even that night, I remember thinking, well, at least she's not hurting right now. At least she isn't in pain. And that is a very, 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 very cold comfort for me as her sister. But I can't imagine the amount of pain my sister would have been in to leave her kids, you know, that she taught, to leave my family, to leave my dad. Like, I can't imagine. And when we had her memorial service at Stowe Elementary, the thing that I kept saying, because a couple parents came up, was she would never have left them. If she was in her right mind, she would never have left her, your kids. And that's what was so difficult for me to kind of understand is, like, she would never have left them if she was who she was for most of her life. And I think, yeah, that's really hard. And she must have been in just phenomenal pain to leave those kids that she helped so much and to leave all of her friends who she also helped so much and who loved her with everything.
So where would your family go from here in a perfect world? You talked again in the obituary about dragging these topics out into the light, some kind of a community event, maybe conversation. Are you thinking about maybe planning something?
Well, we started a memorial scholarship at Aletha's alma mater because in the first couple weeks after her death, all I could think about was what's going to happen to the kids that she taught. She taught kids with severe autism, and I was obsessed with the idea of what's going to happen to them. Someone has to help them. So we started a scholarship with NIU, and if anyone wants to give to that endowment, they can. We also are hoping to maybe bring in a speaker to UWS in the fall from save.org, which is this big suicide awareness organization. We'll also be at the walk that's on July 16th that SAVE is putting on for suicide awareness and prevention. It's really difficult because in some ways it feels like a long time ago that Aletha died because everything is so different. But it's still really fresh, and so I feel like I'm only just now getting my ability to think back because for a long time I couldn't do anything. And so I'm not really sure. I'm doing a recording for a training on suicide for the Marines. In D.C. there's a battalion that I'll be speaking to. And so it's a lot of like little kind of stuff right now. I haven't really been in a space cognitively where I can come up with like a cohesive plan of attack, which for people that know me know that's, I was really struggling.
Let us know if there's anything we can do.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I've just been overwhelmed by the support in the community. And then when the Washington Post thing was published, I got, you know, 400 or 500 emails from people all over the country. And the News Tribune was really nice. They did a nice article by John Myers and then a podcast following up. So I think that this community and you know, broader, really wants to talk about this. And I think it's really, I've been really heartened by the response. Everyone's been really kind and really positive. And I've just been overwhelmed by the sheer amount of me too, I've experienced this too.
Eleni,
so thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Eleni Pinnow joined us as our guest on our special series, Don't Believe Everything You Think, talking about suicide, this week on Northland Morning.